All right, we're diving into a really interesting case today. 16 Casa Duce, LLC v. Merkin. And, you know, this is a case that really highlights the sometimes murky waters of copyright.
Yeah.
When it comes to film and creative collaborations.
Absolutely.
So to set the scene, we've got a film director, Alex Merkin, who was hired to direct a short film for Casa Duce.
Right, a production company.
Right, a production company, exactly.
Correct. Yeah.
Seems pretty straightforward so far, right?
You would think so, but
there's a twist.
Here's where the drama unfolds.
Yeah. The work for hire agreement, which is, you know, pretty standard in these situations, was never actually signed by Merkin.
Oh, wow. So no contract.
No signed contract.
That's a bold move.
It is, and that's what really sets the stage for this whole legal battle.
So what happens next?
Merkin, believing that his contributions as a director, you know, his creative vision,
right,
gave him independent copyright to the film.
Okay.
He actually goes ahead and registers a copyright for the raw footage. The raw footage.
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
And then starts sending out cease and desist letters.
Wait, so he's claiming he owns the raw footage even though he never signed the agreement.
That's exactly what he's doing.
That's a pretty big claim.
It is, and it's something that the courts, you know, really had to grapple with.
So what did the court say? I mean,
well, the Second Circuit Court of Appeals.
Okay.
They ultimately sided with Casa Duce, the production company.
They did.
They did, and their reasoning was really interesting. They essentially held that a film is a unitary work.
A unitary work.
Meaning that you can't just separate out the individual contributions, like directing.
Oh, I see.
And copyright them on their own.
So it's like you can't copyright the flower in a cake, right? It's all part of the final product.
That's a great analogy, yeah. The director's contributions,
yeah,
well, they're obviously crucial.
Right.
They're so intertwined with the overall film that they can't really be separated out.
Okay, so big lesson here.
Yeah.
If you're working on a creative project
with
a team, whether it's a film, a song, a piece of software, whatever,
absolutely,
get a contract.
Get it in writing.
Make sure everyone's on the same page from the start.
Clear agreements are crucial.
Absolutely. But now here's where I'm a little confused.
Okay.
If the court said that the director didn't have a separate copyright claim,
right,
how did this whole tortious interference thing come into play?
That's a great question, and that's where things get even more interesting.
Okay.
So remember those cease and desist letters that Merkin was sending out?
Yeah.
Well, Casa Duce argued that those letters actually amounted to tortious interference with their business.
So they're basically saying, even though your copyright claim was wrong,
right,
you still caused us harm by sending those letters.
Exactly. They claimed that he was, you know, messing with their ability to do business by scaring off potential partners, damaging their reputation.
Interesting. So what did the court say about that?
Well, the court actually took the opportunity to clarify what wrongful means means in the context of a tortious interference claim. And in this case, they said, even though Merkin's copyright claim was ultimately rejected, it wasn't completely baseless.
Oh, okay.
So he was wrong, but they didn't think he was acting in bad faith.
So he made a mistake, but it wasn't malicious.
Right. He genuinely thought he had a case.
Interesting. So Casa Duce's tortious interference claim didn't hold up.
It didn't, no.
But this whole thing really highlights the importance of speaking carefully before you start firing off legal threats.
Absolutely.
Right? Because even if you think you're in the right, there can be consequences.
There can be, yeah.
If your claim turns out to be unfounded.
Right.
So
proceed with caution.
Yeah, it's a cautionary tale for sure.
It is.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have.
But there's still so much more to unpack.
Absolutely.
In this case.
Yeah.
And what it means for creative collaborations in general.
Yeah, we've just scratched the surface.
We've just scratched the surface. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Because in part two, we're going to delve even deeper into the concept of works of authorship.
Right.
And how the court's decision in this case could have implications far beyond the world of film.
Absolutely. It's a big one.
All right. We'll be right back after a short break.
Killing. This case really gets to the heart of what's considered like a work of authorship.
Right.
Under copyright law.
Yeah. And it's a question that a lot of creators grapple with.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about collaborative projects.
Absolutely.
You know, we all know that copyright protects original works.
Right.
But how do you define that when you've got multiple people involved.
Yeah. Where do you draw the lines?
Exactly. Where do you draw the lines?
And that's exactly what the Second Circuit had to grapple with in this case.
Okay.
They actually referenced Section 101 of the Copyright Act,
right,
which lays out, you know, categories of copyrightable works. Literary works, musical works, dramatic works.
Right. So those are like the complete standalone pieces.
Right. Like a novel, a song, a finished screenplay.
Okay. But what about all the pieces that kind of build up to that?
That's where things get a little more complicated.
Yeah.
And the court really made a distinction between contributions that can stand on their own as copyrightable.
Okay.
And those that are so intertwined with the project that they really can't be separated.
Mm.
They even brought up another case, Childress v. Taylor,
okay,
which focused on the idea of joint authorship.
Okay, hold on. What exactly is joint authorship?
Yeah, so joint authorship.
I feel like that's kind of key to understanding this whole thing.
It is, and it really boils down to intent.
Okay.
So the Childress case, it established that for something to be considered jointly authored,
right,
everyone involved has to have this understanding up front that they're creating something together,
right,
with shared ownership rights.
Okay, so you can't just come in later and say, oh, I own a part of this.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You got to agree to it from the start.
Makes sense.
So going back to our film case,
yeah,
how did this concept of joint authorship apply to the director?
Right.
Well, the court said that even though directing is obviously a creative contribution,
right,
Merkin's input wasn't really a separate work of authorship,
okay,
in the legal sense.
Okay.
It was too closely tied to the film as a whole.
Right.
And remember, Casa Duce,
yeah,
the production company, they were the ones who initiated the project.
Right. They had the control.
They had the control, exactly.
So it's not enough to just contribute something creative.
Right.
It has to be like a distinct, separable thing.
Yeah, it can't be like a brick in a wall.
I guess,
you can't just pull it out.
Right, right.
The court actually used the word merged to describe it. Merkin's work was merged into this single unified film.
Merged. That's a good way to put it. It's like ingredients in a dish.
Right.
You know, uh-huh, you can't taste the individual salt or pepper anymore.
Right. It's all one flavor.
Yeah. It's all part of the whole.
Exactly. It's a great analogy because it really highlights how,
right,
in these complex collaborations, like filmmaking,
yeah,
individual contributions, cool, can kind of lose their separate identity and,
right,
become part of a larger creation.
So even without that signed contract,
right,
the court basically said Merkin's work fell under Casa Duce's ownership of the film because,
yeah,
they were the driving force behind it.
That's right. It really speaks to this idea of like work for hire.
Okay.
You know, even if there's no paper trail,
right,
the court is going to look at how the project was actually created.
Right.
They're going to look at who was really calling the shots.
Okay.
And in this case, they saw Casa Duce as the dominant author.
Right.
So big takeaway here,
yeah,
real world dynamics,
yeah,
they matter, especially in creative fields.
Right. So courts aren't just going to look at the paperwork.
Exactly.
They're going to look at how things actually played out.
They're going to look at the whole picture.
Okay, well, that's really interesting.
It is.
But what does this all mean for our listeners?
Yeah.
The folks out there who are collaborating on projects.
Right.
What are the key takeaways here?
Well, I think first and foremost, clear agreements are absolutely crucial.
Yeah.
You know, avoid these kinds of messes by having everything in writing from the get-go.
Get it in writing,
right?
Yeah, communication, contracts, all of that.
Absolutely. Communication is key, too.
Right.
It's not just about the paperwork.
Right.
It's about talking to your collaborators.
Right.
Making sure everyone understands the expectations, who owns what, how the project's going to evolve.
So communication plus contracts,
right,
equals a smoother collaboration.
Exactly. You got it.
Okay. But even if you do all of that,
yeah,
what if someone still tries to come in and claim a piece of the project as their own?
Right. Well, that's where things can get really tricky.
Yeah.
And I think this case really emphasizes the importance of,
yeah,
understanding the limits of copyright law. You know, don't just throw around accusations without getting legal advice.
Right.
It's all about balancing,
right,
you know, protecting your work.
Yeah.
But also respecting your collaborators' rights.
And knowing when to kind of step back and get that legal advice.
Absolutely.
Because like we saw with Merkin.
Yeah.
Even if you think you're in the right.
Right.
Your actions can have consequences.
They can, especially when it comes to things like cease and desist letters.
Right.
Those are serious legal documents.
Right. So proceed with caution.
Proceed with caution.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Good advice.
Good advice.
All right. So we've spent a lot of time unpacking 16 Casa Duce, LLC v. Merkin.
We have.
You know, we've talked about contracts, we've talked about works of authorship,
yeah.
And the potential pitfalls of you know, aggressive legal tactics.
Absolutely.
But let's kind of shift gears a little bit here.
Okay.
and look ahead.
Yeah.
You know, what lessons can we take from this case, especially as collaboration, you know, it's exploding in the digital age.
Right. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So this case might be about film.
Right.
But, you know, the core principles here.
Yeah.
I mean, they apply to music, software, visual arts, anything where people are creating together.
Absolutely.
And you think about platforms like TikTok and YouTube.
Right.
Where it's all about remixing and you know, building upon each other's work.
Yeah.
It gets even trickier.
It does, yeah. It's like a whole new world of co-creation.
Yeah.
And this case really feels like a landmark.
Yeah.
In trying to figure out, okay, what are the rules here?
What are the rules of the game?
Right, exactly.
So did the court offer any guidance?
They did.
On how to kind of navigate this new landscape?
They did. And it's particularly interesting because
right.
while they upheld this idea of a unitary work in the context of film,
right.
they also hinted at a potential exception.
An exception. Okay, now you've got me intrigued.
Yeah. So remember how Merkin's claim failed because his directing was seen as inseparable
right, right.
from the film itself?
Yeah.
The court suggested that if he had created separate, like more concrete elements,
okay.
like detailed storyboards, character designs, things like that,
yeah.
those might have been eligible for independent copyright.
So you're saying if you document your contributions
yeah.
in a tangible, fixed form,
right.
they could potentially be treated as separate works.
That seems to be the implication.
What?
Yeah, they really stressed this concept of fixation,
okay.
which, you know, is a cornerstone of copyright law.
Right.
It means your work has to exist in some tangible medium.
Right. So it can't just be an idea floating around in your head.
It can't just be an idea, right?
You have to actually express it.
You got to fix it. You got to write it down, record it, you know, create a digital file.
Get it out there.
Get it out there, yeah. And what's really fascinating is they seem to acknowledge that in today's world, in our digital world,
right.
fixation can take many forms.
Right.
It could be a digital file. It could be a sketch.
Right.
It could even be detailed notes.
So it's like they're encouraging creators to document their process.
Yeah, document your journey.
Their journey
yeah.
to protect their individual contributions.
Absolutely.
Even within a collaboration.
Even within a collaboration.
I mean, this is especially relevant in fields like software development.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, where you've got lines of code that,
yeah.
while they might be part of a larger program,
right.
potentially be protected.
Right. If they represent, like, unique solutions.
Right. If they're original.
Right. And especially if they're well documented.
So documentation is key for programmers.
Documentation is key. Yeah.
It's your best friend.
It's your best friend. Absolutely.
And this could apply to, you know, music production too.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
You know, individual tracks, samples, even if they're used in a final mix.
Yeah.
Might be protectable.
Right. If they're original and they're fixed.
If they're fixed.
In some form. Yeah.
Man, this has been a wild ride.
It has.
You know, we've really explored
yeah.
the very foundation of copyright.
Yeah.
And how it's being kind of challenged and reshaped
right.
by these new ways of working together.
It's a fascinating time to be in this field.
It is. It is.
You know, as technology keeps evolving
yeah.
and creative boundaries continue to blur.
Right.
It's going to be really interesting to see how courts apply these laws.
Yeah, yeah.
To co-creation.
To co-creation, absolutely.
It's going to be a key area to watch.
So, big question for our listeners.
Yeah.
What can you take away from all of this?
Well, I think first and foremost, clarity is key.
Clarity is key.
Clarity is key. Contracts, documentation, communication with your collaborators.
Right.
Make sure everything is crystal clear.
Get it in writing.
Get it in writing. Talk it out.
Right. Avoid those misunderstandings.
Avoid those misunderstandings down the road. Exactly.
And you know, copyright law.
Yeah.
It's complex. It's constantly evolving.
It is. It's not always intuitive.
Especially in the digital world.
Especially in the digital world.
So when in doubt.
Yeah.
Talk to a lawyer.
Talk to a lawyer. Get some advice.
It could save you a lot of headaches down the road.
Absolutely. It's a worthwhile investment.
And finally,
yeah.
remember that collaboration.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is.
You know,
yeah.
approach it with openness, with respect, with fairness.
Absolutely.
Legal protections are important.
They are.
But don't let them overshadow the joy of creating something amazing together.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive.
It does.
Thank you so much for joining us on this exploration of copyright law and creative collaboration.
It's been a pleasure.
You know, we hope you've learned something new.
Yeah, hopefully some aha moments along the way.
Some aha
moments,
for sure. And remember, the world of collaboration is dynamic.
It is.
And so are the laws governing it.
They are. So stay informed. Stay curious.
Stay curious.
And keep creative.
Keep those creative sparks flying.
That's what it's all about.